Bloomington Normal native. Moved on to Washington, D.C. and served for a couple of administrations, and he's got a new book out called The President's Book of Secrets. He served during the Clinton and George W. Bush administrations as an award-winning intelligence officer, manager, and daily intel briefer at the CIA, and he joins us now. His name is David Priest. Good morning, David. Thanks for being on the air with us this morning.
Good morning. It's good to be back on WJBC. I first appeared on your station back probably 30-some years ago when I was a teenager, did a little piece on growing up in Bloomington Normal, and I'm glad to be back.
Wow, I thought you were going to tell me you spun the sponsor wheel or something.
That was a long time ago.
I won $3 on the sponsor wheel. So let's talk, before we get into the book, let's just talk about your life after. Were you a normal grad, right?
That's correct.
Normal community. You went on to Illinois Wesleyan, and where did your life take you from there?
Well, I went on to graduate school at Duke University in North Carolina and got my master's and PhD in political science. Wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with it. A lot of people going to Duke end up teaching at some of the top schools around the country, but I decided to go into government service instead, and so I landed at the Central Intelligence Agency and started a career where I was working to protect the country through the use of intelligence and helping to serve various presidents by giving them the intelligence support they needed to make tough foreign policy decisions.
Or as we call it, the President's Daily Briefing, or the PDB, as we know it today. And that's what the book is about. And I know you can't talk about a lot of things because it's still considered classified, but we can talk about the presidents that received these PDBs. And it started with the Kennedy administration, really. And I found it interesting that he did not like the State Department.
Yeah, it's funny. There's some back and forth during his administration. When he started, there's some documentation that I found in the research showing he thought the State Department was just too big and too slow. And he said, if I want anything quick, I have to go to the CIA, which was relatively agile and nimble in comparison. But then after the failed invasion of Cuba, the Bay of Pigs debacle, he ended up not responding well to CIA, and it led to him not necessarily reading all of the intelligence documents that were coming to him, which led to a new document personally focused on John F. Kennedy, which they called the President's Intelligence Checklist. That document later evolved into what today is known as the President's Daily Brief.
Yeah, because he was a lot like me. I don't think we even heard of ADD at the time, but he just didn't have a big attention span, and he wanted it in a couple of pages.
Yeah, he couldn't sit still for briefings. His advisors were frustrated that he would just be jumping around in his chair. They couldn't count on him sticking around for long if they started talking. So they needed to have some document that had in it everything he needed to know from the secret intelligence world that he could hopefully fold, carry in his suit pocket, and carry it around with him during the day. So whenever he had a spare minute or two, he could read those highlights. And that is the very document that the Central Intelligence Agency created for him in 1961.
And David, were you part of the process? I mean, were you responsible for producing, or at least maybe not editing, but having a hands-on with the daily briefing?
Yeah, I was. After the President's Daily Brief came about in 64 with Lyndon Johnson, that was the evolution there. And every working day since then, every president has received it. So in the Bill Clinton and George W. Bush administrations, I served at the CIA. I helped produce items for the President's Daily Brief. As a manager, I helped review items going into the Daily Book of Secrets. And then I was an intelligence briefer, where I would take the PDB to some of the most senior customers downtown in Washington, D.C. to brief them each day. And I got to tell you, that's where all of the effort of our expensive intelligence community really, that's where the rubber hits the road, because that's where you have to talk to the president, the vice president, and the others that are designated to receive this book about the details within it to make sure they have what they need that day.
Well, not only did you serve President Clinton and George W. Bush, but you interviewed a lot of presidents and vice presidents.
Mm-hmm.
And people in the know. Talk about that. Huh? Who did you talk to prepare this book?
Sure. When I started the research, I had the same questions that many of your listeners do, which is how can you write a book about something which is classified top secret and can't be discussed. And what I found was that the book really is a biography of the president's daily brief, but in doing that, it's really a story about the people who were in orbit around it. It's a story about the presidents, the vice presidents, the CIA directors, the working-level intelligence officers, and what they did to produce, to disseminate, and then to receive this book. So I reached out, and I was surprised that virtually everyone I reached out to wanted to talk. This includes all of the living former presidents and vice presidents who contributed to the book. This includes the majority of CIA directors, secretaries of state and defense, national security advisors, well over 100 individuals who gave me their stories from the last 50 years to include in this book, including many stories that have never been heard before.
Wow, wow. And just looking at some of the presidents, we talked about Kennedy, short attention span, wanted it in a couple of pages, didn't want to deal with, you know, the deal with the State Department. He went with CIA. Bill Clinton, on the other hand, would just soak this up, stuff up like a sponge. He loved the information.
Bill Clinton had an ebb and flow with the PDB, whereas his predecessor, George H.W. Bush, had received a CIA working-level briefer every day to sit down and talk about the contents of this intelligence document. Bill Clinton did that sometimes, but more often he would just read it alone and talk to his advisors about it. But he told me that that did not reflect that he didn't take it seriously. In fact, he said that he took it very seriously, and in many cases he took action directly on the pieces that he would have in the book that morning.
And when we're talking about the president's daily briefing, how many pages is that?
It has varied over the years. There were some examples from the 1960s where many of these books have been declassified now, where sometimes there were only one or two pages. And that is, the intelligence community determined that what the president needed to know about foreign crises and other developments that day were very brief, and they could give it to him in just a page or two. And then I found some examples where the package of the president's daily brief would go up to 30-some pages. So it does vary, both based on the personality of the president who's receiving it, their willingness to take a longer document, and also what's going on in the world that merits the president's attention on that very day.
Hey, let me ask you something. Did any president request that the font be a specific size and style, playing prima donna?
I got to tell you, every president has made a change to his PDB. And this makes sense, because you don't get to the Oval Office without getting a good sense of what works for you in terms of your learning style. Jimmy Carter was a good example. He changed the format of the president's daily brief from his predecessor, Gerald Ford, to include more white space, and it was simple. He liked to jot things down. He liked to write marginal comments. It's hard to do that if the entire page is filled with text. So he wanted more white space, and sure enough, he would jot questions and comments right there. But it goes even beyond that, Scott, because if, in fact, you're the president, and you decide you want the president's daily brief in another format, you're going to get it. Most recently, Barack Obama, he receives his president's daily brief on an iPad. Instead of ink on a paper, he gets electrons on a screen. The same content, which is objective analysis of foreign developments to try to inform the president, but in this case, he can scroll his finger along a screen to read an article rather than flipping a page.
Wow. And I imagine that, you know, these presidents generally get this first thing in the morning, right?
Generally, that's true.
But with President Obama, I imagine he can get updates throughout the day since it's all on the iPad or the iPhone or what have you.
Right. We don't have the details of how that works with the president. We do know that the iPad is the mechanism of delivery. And, of course, that does enable things just by virtue of the technology. You can have interactive graphics. You can have video incorporated into the product and then possibly have updates depending on how it's used.
Talking with David Priest, his book is The President's Book of Secrets, Illinois Wesleyan grad, Bloomington Normal native. This book is available everywhere, and I'm assuming Amazon.com has them. Let's do a lightning round, shall we, and just talk about some of the presidents that have been. We started with Kennedy. Let's go with Richard Nixon.
Nixon was a tough character for many reasons, but the most interesting thing about him and his PDB is, even with all the research I did, interviewing virtually everyone alive who worked with him closely, I'm still not sure if he read it. At first, Henry Kissinger, his national security advisor, had said he thought Nixon ignored it, but then he told me that he was sure that he read it, and he gave me some reasons why he believed so. But that's one of the big mysteries left open with the President's Book of Secrets.
Wow. And with, I want to go back to, was it Kennedy that said, do I have to read all of this?
Yes, when he was unable to sit still for those briefings,
yeah.
What his advisors started doing was simply giving him a large stack of documents from the CIA, the State Department, the Pentagon, and he looked at that stack and just couldn't believe he had to read all of it, and that's why they decided to give him one document that had everything he needed from an intelligence point of view.
Give it to me in one sheet. Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford. Mm-hmm. Gerald Ford came into office when President Nixon resigned, and he had been the first vice president to receive daily in-person briefings from the CIA of this document. So when he became president, he just shifted the real estate of those briefings from his kitchen table in Alexandria, Virginia, to the Oval Office itself, leading to a lot of good interaction.
You've talked about Jimmy Carter. Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan, by conventional wisdom, was not much of a reader, certainly not a reader of serious top-secret intelligence documents. The research debunks that myth. There's plenty of evidence that Reagan marked up his copies of the PDB, circling things, even finding typos. Those are not things that a casual reader does.
I imagine George H.W. Bush was not overwhelmed by it at all since he came from the CIA.
That's right. The first president and vice president before that to have been director of the CIA, he appears to have had a very close relationship with his president's daily brief with two notable results. One, he took an in-person briefing every day for his whole term, something even President Ford had not done. Secondly, he had a little bit of fun with his briefers. He took the book very seriously. It helped him do things like kick Iraq out of Kuwait and end the Cold War peacefully. But he also would do things like make wagers with his briefers about the way that elections were going to come out or have some humor put into the president's daily brief to balance the very serious content therein.
Really? Interesting. Now, I don't know how much you can talk about this, but you served under Clinton and George W. Bush.
That's correct.
That transition, we all know. So you were there on the events of September 11th and the days and
right.
months leading up to that. What can you tell
right.
us about that's not classified? Give me a little anecdote about that time.
Yeah, the Counterterrorism Center at the Central Intelligence Agency was at the forefront of the work before and after September 11th, and I had the privilege of working there. The efforts to get ahead of al-Qaeda and the terrorism issues before September 11th are documented in the book that led to perhaps the most famous President's Daily Brief item in history because it was declassified by the 9/11 Commission, and that was a piece that President George W. Bush received in August of 2001 saying bin Laden determined to strike in the United States. The piece is very clear about the intent of al-Qaeda to strike in the United States, but it doesn't give a lot of details about the capability, and that's really what the commission focused on. Because of that, some of the changes after 9/11 to the president's daily brief were amazing. I lived through those, and I saw the increased attention to intelligence, the increased attention to how the pieces were put together to go in, and most notably, the increased attention to getting input from other intelligence agencies, such as the FBI, so that if a terrorism issue crossed the foreign domestic divide, the president's daily brief was able to include items from both agencies.
Wow, very interesting. Nixon didn't like the CIA. Kennedy
yeah.
didn't like the State Department. Was there, or are there presidents that took it all in? I mean, they had a good relationship with the FBI, the CIA, the State Department.
Mm-hmm. Right. It seems to me, at least the ones that I spoke with, all the living presidents, they all seem to appreciate the support they got, but recognize the constraints that came with it, because they know that not everything around the world can be known. So they were frustrated with what was not in the president's daily brief. But to a person, they appreciated what they did get and gave some acknowledgement of the fact they knew that this was a little bit of a tough job to get them everything they needed to know on a daily basis.
All right. Now, I don't want to get political, but I have a question because
sure.
we're in a campaign right now. All these candidates are all telling you, here's what I'd do with this, especially when it comes to foreign policy. When you hear candidates talk about what they would do if they were president,
mm-hmm.
Does it ever make you all the information I ever get is from the movies and your book now. But I'm thinking these guys don't have a clue as to what is really going on in the world, because that is intelligence that is privy to so few people.
Right.
Am I right or am I right?
Well, here's how I look at it. What you say as a candidate is very different than what you would say as president. Part of that is because the candidates have not received the president's daily brief yet. They do not receive daily intelligence briefings. So they're saying a lot of things about the world that might be changed once they see what the facts on the ground are and what the best assessment of the intelligence services are. But it is a valid question to ask, and it was unfortunate in my eyes that in all of the hundreds of debates and town halls that we've been seeing for the last few months, there was not a single question to any of the candidates about how they would receive their daily intelligence and how they planned to use the objective, timely, and hopefully accurate intelligence assessments they're receiving to inform their foreign policy. And that's a real question. Knowing how each candidate plans to preserve this channel of objective analysis would help Americans decide which ones are most likely to use their daily book of secrets most effectively.
Would a candidate,
and which ones would not.
Would a candidate know ahead of time how they would receive that stuff? Or is this something you learn once you sit down with advisors? Here's how we do things around here. And then they could tweak it. But would they know going in how they were going to receive that daily briefing?
Well, it is their choice to make, and even if their advisors would help them decide how to use it, it does give some insight into the judgment and the character of the candidate if they're thinking about how could I use my advice from the intelligence services most fruitfully. I'll give you an example. George H.W. Bush, back when he was president, one morning he was discussing the president's daily brief at his home up in Kennebunkport, Maine, with career CIA analyst Bob Gates, who was then serving as deputy national security advisor. Gates recalls Bush focusing on a PDB article that judged some forces against Soviet leader Gorbachev were about to attempt a coup before the Soviet leader could sign a treaty giving responsibility out to the republics. After reading this assessment, Bush looked up from his book and said, "Should I take this seriously?" Gates replied, "Yes, and here's why." With the intelligence briefer there, he started reviewing the warnings CIA experts had been putting out, and sure enough, within 24 hours, Gorbachev's opponents locked him up and seized control of the Soviet Union. That kind of judgment, being able to read the book every day and then being able to ask the questions to determine how confident the assessment is, that's something candidates should be thinking about how they can do that, and something we deserve to know as voters.
All right, the name of the book, The President's Book of Secrets, David Priest. One final question. Are there? Did they find aliens in Area 51?
I have nothing to report on that. I was not ever working the alien account.
All right. Hey, good luck with the book. It looks fascinating, just fascinating. The President's Book of Secrets, David Priest, that's P-R-I-E-S-S, if you're going to look it up, available everywhere, including Amazon. Right, David?
You betcha.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.